This podcast was recorded Thursday, May 2nd at 12.02 p.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like I just won't show up before a U.S. House committee when I'm called to testify. No big deal, right?
Unless you're subpoenaed, then things change. Let's talk politics. This is Snolly Goster, WOSU's weekly dive into the murky waters of Ohio politics. I'm Steve Brown.
Murky indeed. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up, we go back in time by a few hundred million years in our search for the Snolly Goster of the week.
But first, we only need to go back 100 days to the start of the DeWine administration. It's been a pretty busy 100 days in office for Mike DeWine, our new Republican governor. He started with a fight over the gas tax, then rolled out his proposed budget, which is taking center stage this week. And he also revived a fight started by his predecessor, John Kasich.
Here to help us recap the governor's first 100 days in office and get a preview of what's on the horizon is Karen Kassler. She's the State House Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio and Television. Karen, welcome back to Snolly Goster.
Hi, guys. How are you?
All right, Karen, in his first 100 days, Mike DeWine has raised taxes. He's proposed a budget that has big increases in social programs and public education. He proposes spending surplus money on environmental programs. He signed an executive order related to renew protections for transgender state employees. He's put a halt to executions, and now he supports gun control legislation. When did Mike DeWine change parties, Karen?
Well, it's funny because I talked to the chairs of Republican and Democratic parties this week, and that was kind of the impression that we kind of started with the whole idea of that he's done some things that even some Democrats, I mean, after the State of the State, there were the reviews that said it almost was like a Democrat delivered that. But certainly he's had some conservative things that he's done, and obviously the chair of the Ohio Republican Party, Jane Timken, is very pleased with what she's seen out of the governor's office. But, you know, that there are some things that Democrats have said that they appreciate that have happened, and you just ticked off a whole bunch of them. You know, it's been a very, very interesting perspective, especially when you compare it to the first 100 days of John Kasich when he took office and Jobs Ohio was passed, and he talked about getting on the bus or getting run over by the bus and things like that.
Senate Bill 5 passed.
Oh, that's
long
right.
After.
Senate Bill 5 was right up there, too.
Yeah.
You could argue the only truly conservative thing that he has done, and it is a big thing, is sign perhaps the most restrictive anti-abortion law in the country, the Heartbeat Bill.
Well, yeah, and I think that's no surprise. I mean, he talked about it during the campaign. He has been, and I've said this before, he's probably the most pro-life governor that Ohio has ever had, and that's saying something. So, you know, this was not a big surprise, and certainly a lot of Democrats were frustrated with that. They were frustrated, I think. You know, the Democrats that helped elect Larry Householder as Speaker, he got to be Speaker with a coalition evenly numbered Republicans and Democrats. The Democrats knew that this was a bill that was coming forward. Everybody knew it was going to happen, so it wasn't a huge surprise. But for DeWine's side, he's also talked about this being one of the things that he's been doing to improve the lives of children, that he talks about being pro-life not only before a child is born, but then after later on, and that's what he points to some of the things in his budget regarding children's initiatives and that sort of thing. It's almost like there was an attitude of getting the heartbeat bill, or the six-week abortion ban, as Democrats have been calling it, out there, done, and over with, so that other things could move forward.
So you could say with the gas tax, too, get it out of the way, and then you can move on to other things.
Well, there was a real timeline on that
because the
budget had to be signed by March 31st, and he didn't have a whole lot of time to deal with that, but that's another area where some conservatives had said, hey, wait a minute, this is a tax increase, while other Republicans have said, well, this needs to be done.
You mentioned the state budget. The governor has not proposed a tax cut in his version. The House appears ready to propose one, along with cutting a tax break for sole proprietors who make more than $250,000 a year. They want to lower that cap to $100,000 a year. So when it comes to the budget, Karen, will taxpayers and the people who directly benefit from state spending see much of a change in this budget cycle?
Well, you could certainly ask that. You could ask if whether they've seen a change since going back to 2005, when the first income tax cuts that we've seem to have been following started under Governor Bob Taft. I think, you know, there are some taxpayers who will say, hey, it's easier for us to see a change if you have to raise taxes versus if you're lowering taxes. And you know, I think there are some people who are concerned about what happens if you continually lower income taxes. Then at some point, if there's a recession or there are problems, what if you have to come back and raise either income taxes or some other tax? And even George Voinovich had to consider doing that with a penny tax increase when he was in office. So I think there are some Republicans who are questioning that. Obviously, Democrats have been questioning this for a long time, saying that these income tax cuts that we've had since 2005 really haven't done a whole lot to improve Ohio's economy and have really benefited the wealthiest Ohioans. You talk about that tax deduction there, that LLC tax deduction that allows small businesses, sole proprietorships, partnerships to take the first $250,000 of their income tax-free, and many of them didn't create a single job with that. So that's interesting that Larry Householder, the Speaker, has identified that as one of the tax breaks he wants to kind of roll that back to $100,000 income rather than $250,000.
Karen, another part of the budget is school funding. Governor DeWine wants to increase money for, quote, wraparound services for kids. He wants to send more money to poorer districts. We also have the Cutt-Patterson plan that looks to create what backers say would be a more equitable balance between state and local funding of schools. This has been a really hard nut to crack for more than 30 years now. What do you see happening with school funding in the coming months or even coming years in the DeWine administration?
Well, I think this Cutt-Patterson proposal has no chance. The governor and the speaker have both said they don't like it. They appreciated the work that Representatives Bob Kupp, a Republican from Lima, and John Patterson.
How long did they spend on it?
They spent more than a year.
There you go.
Kupp and Patterson spent more than a year on this.
Oh, we appreciate that work, though.
Right. But, you know, the real question has been, can they create a formula that is better than the existing formula? They say they did, because they say the existing formula for 8 out of 10 schools, basically, in Ohio, 80% of the schools in Ohio don't get the money that the formula says they should get. Well, Kupp and Patterson wanted to fix that. They wanted to make it more fair, more comprehensive, something schools could rely upon to try to give them a sense of what kind of money they were going to get from the state. They came up with a formula that they said did that. The problem was, and they didn't want to talk about this at first because I asked them a couple of times, how much was it going to cost? It's going to be more than $1 billion more than the current budget for K-12 funding. So, well, that money's just simply not there. And then also, it really parcels the money out in ways that some people don't think goes along with that Supreme Court decision. For instance, 71 school districts under their formula would get flat funding, and many of those school districts have large numbers of economically disadvantaged kids who need more money to be educated, in a sense, because they come to school with so many challenges. They haven't often gone to high-quality preschool. They come to school hungry. They have health issues, this sort of thing. That's where the wraparound services money comes in. And DeWine put $550 million in his budget to try to deal specifically with those wraparound services and really targeted schools toward that money to be spent just on those kinds of things to try to raise up those scores for those economically disadvantaged kids.
Is it safe to say, Karen, if this one doesn't pass, we're not going to solve this? I mean, it's been 20 some odd years. This one, at first, even critics of the current school funding plan, longtime critics like Bill Phyllis said, this one actually looks pretty good, and it just fell flat.
Well, the problem is, too, that it also had triple-digit percentage increases for some of the wealthiest school districts in the state, including Olentangy up in Delaware County. So, you know, I think that this is – I don't know that this is necessarily back to the drawing board, but certainly the idea that school funding – may have gotten close to being resolved is kind of a big deal, but boy, you're right. It's really, really complicated. It's difficult, and nobody seems to ever find a solution they like completely.
A lot of people don't want to solve, to be quite frank. I mean, that's why people move to districts like Dublin and like Olentangy. They move there because of the schools, and they want more local control. I mean, there are obviously people who feel the opposite, but it's a very hard issue. Karen, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Governor DeWine saying he wants a red flag law. That's a law that would give judges the power to take guns away from people determined to be in danger of committing violence either against themselves or others. Governor Kasich wanted this. Now DeWine wants it. Why? Why exactly?
Well, DeWine talked about that in the context of the recent shooting at a synagogue out in California, and he said that was horrible. He thought it was deplorable, and he was saying that a red flag law, he had had his staff looking into that. So that implies that it goes back to before that particular shooting that he was interested in this, but certainly that shooting was a catalyst to talk about it. But yeah, you're right. In this environment, I mean, DeWine has said, for instance, he supports gun legislation such as carrying a concealed weapon without a permit. He's said that he would support that. But, you know, this one, and going back to Governor Kasich, he had a pretty high-profile public change of heart on gun laws after signing everyone that was put in front of him. Then last year, right after the Parkland shooting, he made this very public reversal, so to speak, and said he wanted to support common sense gun regulations, such as a red flag law. The question DeWine says now is, how do I get one that could pass? How could he propose one or get one proposed that could actually pass this legislature? And that's the real issue. This legislature has expanded gun rights, and it seems that they're very suspicious of any sort of law that would allow guns to be seized from people deemed to be dangerous because of concerns about due process.
Yeah, I can't see Larry Abhoff, who's eyeing higher office, or Larry Householder, who shot up televisions in his campaign ads a couple years ago, signing on to this. Just, again, big picture, Karen. What do if a Democrat did some of the things that Mike DeWine has done, raised taxes, proposed new gun control legislation, they'd be howling. What do conservatives say about this governor and the way he's running the state right now?
I have asked that question a couple of times, and the answer I always get is, and I've asked it of people who are close to DeWine, the answer is always, well, he's the governor, he's leading, he wants to do these things. And the real question is going to be among Larry Householder's own people. For instance, he had some people that are very concerned about tax increases and that sort of thing. And here's Larry Householder even talking about tax breaks and rolling some of those back. So
which would be called a tax increase if a Democrat proposed it.
Well, exactly. And there are some conservatives out on Twitter who are talking about this looks like a tax increase. This is a strange thing for a Republican-dominated legislature to be considering. But, yeah, I mean, it really is interesting to see DeWine doing these things when he's been described by so many people as super conservative. But he did bring Democrats into his administration, and he has talked about ideals that I think he feels are both Democratic and Republican. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, you have to wonder if Richard Cordray had won the election and he was talking about doing these things, what would the thought process be then?
Well, I don't have to wonder. I think I know what Republicans will be saying.
Right. And so it's a legitimate question. And again, I've asked some of the DeWine people and they said this is what the governor wants to do. This is how the governor wants to lead and this is how he's doing it.
He also benefits from this being a capstone job. He probably doesn't have to run for he might run for a second term, but he's not running for anything after that.
Well, and I asked Jane Timken, the Ohio Republican Party chair, about that, if he's going to run for a second term, or might there be others, such as Lieutenant Governor John Houston, mm-hmm. who could potentially take that position and take over for him. And she says absolutely that DeWine is going to run for a second term. But you're right. I mean, beyond the governor's office, he's done, I think, everything he's ever wanted to do. And this is the final stop. So he wants to do these things and you know, defy whatever anybody wants to criticize him.
You know, Occam's razor, you're always looking for the simplest explanation. Is it because that Mike DeWine is just a nice guy and he gets along with everybody and people say, you know what, he's not doing this for political gain. He's trying to do what he thinks is right for the state. He's a good politician. He knows how to work the legislature. And he's a nice guy.
He's the anti-Snollygoster?
Yes.
Well, I think one thing, too, if you look back through his record, some of the things that he's done already, for instance, signing the 6-week abortion ban, the heartbeat bill, really speaks to some of the things that he's stood for in his career, but also the whole idea of kids, the whole idea of being anti-tobacco. That goes back to when he was in the Senate and even maybe before that. I mean, he's talked about children's initiatives and children's issues for a long time and talked about abortion issues and being anti-abortion for a long time. These are things that he's talked about his whole career. So if anybody's surprised by some of this stuff, they haven't been paying attention to who Mike DeWine has put himself out there as being.
Karen Kassler, State House Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio and Television. Great to have you on as always, Karen.
Hey, thanks.
Thanks, Karen.
Let's take a break and we'll be right back.
In WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it is time now for our Snollygoster of the Week, the political operative that displays the shrewdest behavior.
And this week it was a group of savvy lobbyists who did the impossible in the State House. They got every state senator, everyone, Democrat, Republican, to agree on something, even if that thing has been dead for more than 350 million years.
We're talking about the effort to make the Dunk Leostasis Torelli Ohio's official state fossil fish.
I'm glad you said that because I'm not sure I could have. Anyway,
it's the dunk fish. It has a nickname. It's called the dunk fish.
Oh, okay.
The dunk.
The dunk fish lived in Northeast Ohio where it was covered with water. It was about 20 feet long, weighed a ton, and had self-sharpening teeth that would slice its prey into pieces.
It's kind of like a blunt-nosed shark. Huge, blunt-nosed shark. So who were the Snollygosters who went to bat for the dunk fish? Ohio middle schoolers, including Bree Obhoff, Senate President Larry Obhoff's 12-year-old daughter, who testified before a Senate committee last month. As Cleveland.com reports, the fate of the dunk's immortality now rests with the Ohio House.
So congratulations to those Ohio middle schoolers, our Snollygosters of the week. Snollygoster sounds like a prehistoric fish, kind of.
Could be.
Like the what's the lizard, the official reptile of Ohio?
I couldn't tell you.
I can't think of it.
Isn't the pawpaw in there?
The snot otter, right?
That's right. How could I forget that?
The snot otter. Anyway, if you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the Week, it probably won't be as cute as this week, but still go ahead and send it anyway. You can send an email to snollygoster@wosu.org.
You can also send WOSU a note on Facebook, on Twitter. You can be sure to leave Snollygoster a good review. We only take good reviews on iTunes. Until next week, I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown on Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.